News Talk Breakfast. In association with AIR. Seamless connections with Ireland's number one broadband provider.
Let us go to Chief Medical Officer of Ireland, Dr. Tony Holohan. Good morning, Tony. The government is set to roll out subsidised antigen testing, it looks like, despite Neffet's obvious reservations about them. Are they wrong?
It's not reservations about antigen tests per se, because there are circumstances in which we recommend them and always have. It's about how they're interpreted. And we have data which we've been measuring over the course of the last period of time about how they're being used. We know about in our most recent set of data from Wednesday of last week shows that in the previous week, about one in five adults had used an antigen test. It showed that the majority of those adults, when they used them, were symptomatic, which is not our advice. And it showed when they got a negative test, only about one in three of them went on to get a PCR test and to restrict or isolate them themselves. So clearly, people are not adequately following the advice about how they should appropriately be used. When they're used appropriately, they can play a role. So what we have to do is to try and really ensure that people understand the message, use them not when they're symptomatic, but when they're asymptomatic, and respond only to a positive result. So if you have a positive result when you don't have symptoms, it might indicate that you have early pre-symptomatic COVID and you should not undertake whatever activity it is you are planning to undertake, maybe having some people to your house, attending an event of some kind or whatever. Unfortunately, a negative test when you don't have symptoms doesn't allow you to conclude that you don't have COVID. But most importantly, if you have symptoms, you do a test and the test is negative, it simply does not mean that it's safe for you to go about your business on the basis that you don't have COVID. Two possibilities arise. You could in fact have COVID, or you might have another transmissible respiratory virus like RSV. We've had over 400 children admitted to hospital this winter so far with RSV. So it's really, really important. If you're symptomatic, the test for you is PCR and not an antigen test.
Okay. In fairness, considering there's never been much of an information or an education campaign in association with the use of antigen testing, it's hardly surprising if people aren't using them correctly. They are a useful tool. I think a lot of people would argue that. And we are something of an outlier in how little use we're putting them through here. Why is it that we haven't seen, coming from Neffet or the HSE or indeed government, some kind of an information campaign?
Well, I think we've always been clear about the circumstances in which they can be used. In high incidence situations, which is so in outbreak investigations or where the pre-test probability of a positive test is high, that's why we recommend them for use in screening household close contacts. And so there are circumstances in which they can be used, but their widespread availability and the widespread understanding, which isn't high enough, is leading to very substantial levels of inappropriate use. So it's not the test per se, but it's the interpretation that people place on it. So yes, you're right, we have to do everything we can, all of us, not just us in leadership positions in relation to the management of the pandemic, but all of the people who have influence, including in the media, consistent with the message that there are circumstances in which they can be used, but that we have to use them properly and know and understand what the result means.
Yeah,
but we know that antigen testing is just one small part of the solution, and it isn't the silver bullet, which is the other concern we have. There is no, unfortunately, silver bullet for this particular disease. Every measure that we take is important, whether it's vaccination, whether it's following or adhering to the public health advice, using an antigen test in the right situations, and a long list of potential measures, all of a value. And we really only can achieve the kind of impact that we're trying to achieve if we have all of the measures being followed in as much as possible most of the time. Antigen testing on its own.
Yes, but I think you've said yourself there it is one of the
highest levels of use of antigen tests. Look at Austria, look at the UK, and this isn't proof in and of itself, but these are countries that have heavily relied on widespread use in the population in asymptomatic individuals, and it hasn't prevented major surges of infection.
But obviously the UK is far more open as a society than we are, so it's not really comparing like with like. You've said yourself that it's one of the tools and we have to use all of them. A lot of people would say
their use goes back to a time long before they opened. And so the UK has had a much greater challenge. And it's not, of course, only because of antigen testing, but they've had a difference in terms of their approach to testing more generally than we have.
Tony, a lot of people would say that we're not empowering people to do things for themselves, that it's a paternalistic approach. And we did sort of hear this from Neffet around masks as well, that people wouldn't use them right. And in fact, it was floated at one point in wave one that they might add to the case numbers, exactly sort of what we're hearing currently about antigen testing. Would it not be better to say, these are the very clear, simple ways you use antigen tests. These are the very clear, simple occasions on which you might use an antigen test, and give people that extra layer of protection that might benefit them.
I know you're exactly right. It is an extra layer of protection when you use it in the right circumstances and when you follow all of the other advice. And the way in which you take it and the way in which you do it is really important, that you do it properly and that you interpret the results properly. And just like face masks, as you mentioned, really important that you don't just wear a face mask, but you wear it to cover your nose and mouth. You wear the right type of face mask. You wear it in the right settings. So it's really important that you watch your hand hygiene when you're handling a face mask and so on. So all of these things are important. And we can always do more to improve our understanding in relation to how better to use those. So anything we can do to simplify and promote better use, and any of us that can support that, including yourself and the media, so much the better. And of course, that's what we want to be able to do, to try to ensure that every measure is understood, not one singular measure.
All right.
And that all of those measures are followed in as much as we can. As I've said on many occasions, we don't expect perfection, but what we want to see is as many people as possible following most of the measures most of the time.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to need to do to try and break these very significant chains of transmission that are causing such an impact on the entire
Absolutely.
Healthcare.
And the surge is of huge worry to all of us, I've no doubt. Let me talk to you a little bit about boosters.
Sure.
The rising cases are probably to do with, yes, increased socialisation, particularly indoors because it's winter, but also
there's no probably about it, Kerry. It's definitely to do with
the
that.
Waning immunity. Have we been too slow on boosters? It is a criticism that is levelled at NIAC and government over and over again.
So we're boosting the population now, and we're boosting what is already a very heavily immunised population, much more so than most other countries in the world, and particularly in Europe. And so that's a good situation to find ourselves in. But we now know we need to top up that level of immunity. But what we've seen in terms of this scale of infection, this surge is caused by socialisation. It's not just caused by immunity, but we know that we've had waning immunity. And the good news is that the booster vaccine that has rolled out and has vaccinated people over the age of 80 sees now that people over the age of 80 are the only age groups in the population for whom the incidence of
is that not the exact falls, argument for boosting then over 50s and over 40s and over 30s and in fact all of us?
So over 50s, as well as those people with underlying conditions under the age of 50 and all healthcare workers, are now the subject of recommendations. That's more than 2 million people. The HSE is stepping up its administration campaign to, as quickly as possible, boost as many of those people as possible. And NIAC will continue to make advice available. We know that a number of other countries have, as you say, gone beyond that. My expectation is that may well happen in this country. But every country that has a recommendation in place still goes through the groups to be boosted on a prioritised basis. You start with those at highest risk, who are the older people and those with underlying medical illnesses, and then you work your way through the younger age groups until the entire population is done.
It does seem, though, I mean, the kind of evidence that we've seen coming out of places like Israel, that has been clear for months really now. Is it not the case that we could have moved a little quicker, that we didn't have to wait till there was thousands of healthcare workers sick or in isolation, that we didn't have to wait to see a surge of this magnitude?
In fact, the evidence around healthcare workers it shows that, in fact, waning immunity is not such a significant issue on the basis that they're mostly younger people. And the good news for younger people is the evidence is not nearly as strong in terms of waning immunity, and the protection of the vaccines is longer lasting than it is for older age groups. And it has been clear for some time, as you say, that for older people, which is why we've had that recommendation in place now. It's the middle of October when NIAC made the recommendation in relation to over 60s, and HSE is working its way through administering vaccine to all those age groups and appropriately following a prioritised approach, which is how we rolled out the first vaccination programme. There were concerns at the very start of that programme, if you remember rightly, that it appeared to be slow. But if you look at where we got to in terms of the total impact of that, a much higher level of vaccination than many, many other countries achieved. And I've no doubt, and I'm confident with both the advice and the guidance, the public's trust in that from NIAC, combined with the operational excellence of the HSE in delivering that, that we'll see something which is just as good as other places in the world.
I hope so, because we aren't seeing people rushing. We're hearing a 50% from the HSE no-shows for boosters. It's hard to know.
I was talking to a GP last weekend who had 400 patients scheduled for boosters, and only about 10 of those didn't show.
Okay. So, that's
in a large practice in Tala. And his experience is that the vast majority of people
good.
In his practice, we're looking forward to it.
Let me talk to you about the broad picture and the long-term view, because to be honest, every single person listening to this programme this morning is worried about one thing, the reintroduction of restrictions, where we go from here. What is the long-term plan? I mean, are we looking at rolling boosters and recurrent threat of restrictions going forward? Is that it ad infinitum?
Well, first of all, in relation to immunisation, we have hope, but we'll need the longitudinal studies to tell us that the benefit of a boosted population will last longer than the initial vaccination. And that's what our hope will be. But there is a possibility that we will require further boosters down the line. We can't say exactly what that duration is going to be. But that's not an unlikely scenario. We can see other developments that are positive. We see the advent, as I'm sure you're aware of antivirals that show at least some potential in terms of preventing progression of mild illness becoming more severe infection. But we do need to get the levels of transmission back down to a point where our public health system can, at an earlier stage, pick up local surges of disease and step in with more localised responses to control and limit the spread of that infection. At these high levels of infection, it's very hard for things like contact tracing, case management,
yes,
and isolation.
Yes, and we can see the pressure on the system. But I think what people really want me to ask you this morning is, at what level of cases is NPHET going to press the green light for more restrictions? At what level do we have to hit? You know, at what stage are you going to call it?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear me say it's not just in relation to a particular number. We make an assessment of all of the impacts, not just of the disease, but also the impact on the healthcare service. And we have to weigh up.
So is it a number in ICU then?
No, it's not. It's not a single number. So all of these things that go into making a judgment, and the way we do that is we look at all of this data, we look at the evidence and the science as much as we can at each of our NPHET meetings. We'll do that again on Thursday. We'll give consideration to what guidance and advice we might need to provide to government. We have to bear in mind that the measures that government mandated last week only came into effect over the course of either the end of last week or early this week. And by later this week, it probably will be too soon to make a reasonable assessment of whether those have impacted or not.
I'm not sure that many people believe that closing hospitality at 12 o'clock is going to be ground and game changing in all of this. I presume there is modelling that exists that has a number, even if you don't want to tell me. I couldn't imagine that wasn't the case.
It's not that I'm reluctant to tell you. It's not about one single measure on one single indicator. But the thing that will have an effect is, like, if the only thing that changes is that government's mandate in terms of hospitality changes the times in which people can go to the pub or nightclubs, but nothing else changes, then you're absolutely right. But I think it's an important signal. So government did more than just that. They also mandated people to work from home where unless absolutely necessary. And that the signal that comes from all of these things, that this is now a serious situation that's having a serious impact on public health in the first instance, which is most important, and then a secondary effect on the impact in terms of our healthcare system, particularly on hospitals, that people will see that and begin to modify and change their own behaviour. And I think we see a lot of good, encouraging evidence of that, at least anecdotally so far. A lot of evidence, a lot of talk that people are stepping back, you know, unfortunately having to, but showing the responsible...
People are talking about the anomalies, though, that they're stepping back from the Christmas parties, but they're seeing full stadiums for matches for rugby. They're seeing full stadiums for you know, FAI games, for GAA county finals. There does seem to be some anomalies out there in terms of what is allowed or considered good and acceptable and what's considered irresponsible.
But the thing that I'd want to just point to is that the total volume of socialisation that we do, and that's in other words, social interactions of whatever kind, wherever they take place, we need to reduce. And if we make a reduction in terms of workplace and in terms of hospitality along the lines that government has mandated, that will significantly cut the total volume of socialisation, which will make a contribution. It's not a case of showing that because I can go into location A, I should be able to go into location B. If we're doing less socialisation, we're making a contribution.
Look, this is the second Christmas in a row where we're starting
and to take onto themselves the measures that they can take to improve their own behaviour.
This is the second Christmas in a row where we're talking about potential restrictions, a meaningful Christmas. Do you see, coming up to Christmas, this side of Christmas, everything remaining open? Hospitality and schools, I think, are the two big ones.
We're just going to have to see how we go over the course of the next period of time, as we've said.
So not inevitable that there will be a closure, even though people are getting their kids' school books sent home just in case.
And I know that we're now the 22nd of November. There's a little over 10 days to go to the beginning of December. the majority of infection that's going to occur in December is for people who are not yet infected. So anyone who's going to have this infection in December effectively is not yet infected. So there's nothing inevitable about this. And individuals have it within their individual power themselves to take on these. So it's not about what the government will necessarily do for you. People now know and understand what are the simple measures from a public health point of view, the wearing of masks, okay, social distancing, avoiding crowds, not meeting up indoors where they don't have to, cutting their social contacts, getting boosted, okay, getting vaccinated if they haven't already been vaccinated,
and
then using antigen tests responsibly.
So
all of these measures are important.
Two more very brief questions for you.
Sure.
One is, a lot of people would say that NPHET has sort of changed in terms of tone, and vaccines notwithstanding, and that when we saw this level of cases back in January, it was a very different story. Has there been any political pressure put on NPHET in order to, I suppose, change that tune a little bit?
No, absolutely not. Like, what we do is we respond to the evidence and the data. That's what, if we change our advice and our view on something, it's because our interpretation of the data and evidence has changed.
Okay.
We don't change because there's pressure either externally or internally placed on us. That's the right and proper thing for us to do. It's what people would expect us to do. It's not what's going to necessarily make us popular, but we don't respond to anything else other than what we perceive to be the changes we need to make in our interpretation of the evidence.
And a last question for you, Tony, before
sure.
you go. We've
sure.
been in this since March, since February, perhaps, 2020. Looking back over that whole course of time, would you have done anything differently?
Well, there are probably lots of things that we'd do differently. The world learned as it went.
But you specifically?
Well, all of us. I mean, I've had a leadership responsibility since the very beginning. And we have grown, expanded the scale of the response that we've had in place over that time period to bring in a range of different and new disciplines. We have lots of things now happening. We didn't think we'd have vaccines.
But no regrets.
Boosters. What do you mean regrets?
I'm just wondering,
I'm not advancing a case in case you think I am.
No, I'm just wondering, would you have done anything at different, with hindsight, would there have been anything you would have done differently?
Well, I can tell you, in relation to myself and the people who work with me on that, we have done our level best all of the time that we've been involved. That's what we'll continue to do. We take our responsibility seriously. We have always done, and we'll continue to do so.
Dr. Tony Holohan, Chief Medical Officer of Ireland. Thank you for that indeed.